To keep your dog in top condition, get your pet complete nutrition. Feed them sturdy, make them sturdy, happy, friendly, petty, furry. Any dog can be a winner if he eats some sturdy dinner. Feed them sturdy, beefy sturdy, vet with vet, insist on sturdy. Ask any dog who's tasted it, the doggy with the bit. You sturdy dinner, dog food is delicious.
Hello and welcome to the Classic Rock podcast with me, Scott Rowley, Ms. Sharon Llewellyn.
Hello.
And Mr. Ian Fortnum.
Hello.
We're going to talk through some classic rock news, play some tracks, and there's going to be interviews with Jeff Barton talking to Thunder and Phil Collin.
Bumper podcast.
Well, hopefully not as bumper as last time, which was just unlistenable. It's like the prog rock double album of all podcasts.
This will just be a little, you know, punk ditty.
So I guess we start off with some news. Mr. Fortnum, I'm sure you'd like to comment on today's rumours, as we record this, that the Faces have got an album finished and they're going to have Flea on bass.
It's just both delighting for me as an old fan, yet diabolical news on so many levels, because like, he's the wrong man for the job. Flea is not the right man for the job.
He's a brilliant bass player.
Yeah, but they don't need a brilliant bass player. I mean, you've got... Ronnie Lane wasn't called Plonk for nothing, you know.
So you said they should get a deliberately bad bass player?
No, they should get someone in the spirit of the Faces. They should get someone... Like, someone be keeping the mod flag flying.
Like?
They should keep... I don't know, let's have a think. Paul Weller, there's a bass player. You get him off the guitar onto the bass, he'd love it. He's got the right hair. He looks about the right age, poor fella. Glenn Matlock. Glenn Matlock. There's a man who plonks as well, you see. There's a fella. He's done Small Faces tribute albums and all that. Yeah, you need more plonkers in the band. There's four already, just they want fifth.
Well, maybe Flea can be a plonker, you know, just for this occasion.
Oh, could you imagine? It would just be like sitting there in the blocks, wanting to flip, flap, flop with the old thumb. Yeah, then maybe they should
perhaps they should keep Flea for the remixes.
Yeah, maybe the dance remixes.
Yeah.
So the story is that Ronnie and Rod have written an album or written and recorded it.
Well, they say. I mean, the online reports say that they've recorded it. It's finished
in 3 days. So it's going to be good.
Seems a little bit bogus, doesn't it?
Seems a little bit odd in that you consider that Rod's not exactly got his writing hat on. In that he's done 3 albums of standards, and before that a Salute to Britpop album of covers and the Tom Waits songs that get him in the charts. Like, come on, Rod, when last did you write a song? And suddenly you've written an album in 3 days with Ronnie.
Unless he's been recording all these great American songbook albums just for something to put out. And meanwhile, he's been writing brilliant Faces-esque stuff that he's kept in his loft.
When he can tear himself away from the train set. that's where he's been most so much to imagine. But no, I think it's a bit odd that they're saying that the whole album has been written up in 3 days by Rod and Ronnie, when you consider that probably Ian McLagan, who's been really keeping the Faces flag flying, has been writing really well, and he's been, you know, he's been on the road, and he seems to be the driving force, and he's got some wonderful tunes.
Yeah.
And yet they've gone to the names. You know, it seems to be, he's kind of suddenly he's gone back into the background. It's all about the stars of the band.
So do we believe this then, or is it just, I think it was in the Daily Mirror, wasn't it? Is it just the Daily Mirror getting ahead of themselves? Or because you know what happens, that we had this rumour, we had a story in the mag that Lars from Metallica thought that Deep Purple Mark III should get back together, and he'd even volunteered to drum. Next minute, it's all over the internet that
They are
getting back together. Yeah. John Lord's issuing denials, or he's outraged that Pace isn't involved.
Yeah, and Lars is playing the drums.
Yeah, it's all just a lot of...
If you can't trust the red top tabloids in this country, who can you trust? It takes your faith away.
The
really.
Thing is, I mean, at least we know the reunion is legit, because there is an official Faces reunion website. All it says at the moment is Faces, and it's a completely blank website. But it does seem there are genuine wheels in motion for a full-on...
There's been so many rumours of who's going to be doing what, but reading between the lines, the bass player thing, on the Red Hot Chili Poppers website, it's Peppers website, Poppers.
There you go.
It seems that, you know, he's saying that he has played with them at rehearsals, but he seems like he's going to be one of a number of guest bass players.
Right.
And I just imagine they're probably going to have guest bass players on the album and then maybe go out on the road with someone else. who's just going to stand there like that bloke out of the Rolling Stones.
They don't really need a star, do they? A star bass player. Someone, you know, a Darryl Jones that sits at the back would do the trick, wouldn't it?
That's it. You don't need another star.
Stars in that
exactly,
band.
Yeah. I mean, they're all stars. And I just imagine Kenny Jones has wound up his alarm clock so he can keep time again. It's going to be fantastic.
So what's the best you can hope for, do you think, from a Faces reunion? Or album?
Oh... Well, the trouble is, it's not going to be really like an Old Faces album because it's not going to have the two dimensions. It's not going to have all like the Ronnie Wood, the Ronnie Lane, rather, those ballads and all that, you know, that kind of stuff. So there's not going to be that balance. So it's going to have to be quite hard rocking. But then again, Rod's voice, he hasn't been hard rocking for a long time. Can he still cut it is the big question, although I wouldn't dare say such a thing about, you know, a man who should be knighted for his services to rock and roll and the tartan scarf. But yeah, I don't know. I'm just hoping they come out and they do all the hits and that the album isn't some kind of Killing of Georgie catastrophe. And hopefully it'll be like that New York Dolls album, which shocked everybody by being good.
Yeah.
Well, fingers crossed.
And so other big reunion news this week was Mott the Hoople reuniting for two gigs at Hammersmith Apollo in October.
Thrilling. Thrilling again.
Oh.
I'm really thrilled about this.
I am.
Yeah.
I am
looking
Are you
to
genuinely
it.
Thrilled?
I am genuinely thrilled.
You said that without an ounce of
enthusiasm. I know. Well, I don't really do enthusiasm. I can be thrilled, but I can't be enthusiastic and thrilled at the same time. It's too much for a man of my advancing years. But no, speaking of advancing years, it's all the young dudes coming out of the mouths of a 70-year-old man. It's going to be. When they do these gigs, Ian Hunter is going to be 70 years old. But, you know, he's always kept... is handy.
The thing is, his last
you go and see Ian Hunter, he still sounds good.
Yeah, his last album was brilliant as well. So
apparently, his new one's even better. So they're saying,
you know, so he can still cut it. Saw him at the Shepherd's Bush last time out, and it was great. You know,
there's no question with him, is there? You know, he can do it,
and you know he can sing still. So I know, I'm thinking that's going to be a bit of a goodie.
Yeah, it's going to be fab.
Apparently, it sold something like 3,500 tickets within an hour of being announced or something. So it's going. Good guns.
Mm.
It's kind of hard to tell how, you know, but how many people were really excited about it, obviously.
I think it might be one of those ones where it has an initial flurry with people who are really excited and then people sort of forget. And as it gets nearer and nearer and nearer, I think there'll be that sort of momentum. People go, oh, do you know what? I did really like them. And I think it'll be more of a word of mouth in escalation rather than a straight out the gates, you know, sellout.
But to fly the flag for Scotland, you know, there will be people up north and, you know, north of England who will be gutted that they're just doing two gigs in London.
Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll probably do an AC/DC, though, in the end, won't they? They'll,
I suppose it depends
how
these
two go. They're testing the waters,
I think,
really. Because no one wants to come out and play an empty tour rather than an empty gig.
But that's what on Ian Hunter's website he actually said for reasons for why they're doing it. He said, I don't know about the rest of the guys, but I'm doing it to see if we still can or to see what it's... I think his words were something like, to see what it's like. Mm. And I thought, well, that's, you know, that's a fair shout. He's just, let's give it a go. Yeah. Why not? You know, I mean, they've got nothing to lose, any of them, have they?
It's the dream ticket for the old age pensioners as well. It, you know, these are both these are the people that we kind of grew up with. It's like, you know, that the audience is going to be full of the Matlocks and the Mick Joneses and all that kind of thing. Because they all started out wanting to be Mott the Hoople and the Faces. And now they've done their 40th anniversary tours. It's time for like the Motts to come out and do.
Perhaps they should do a Def Leppard Whitesnake tour, have a Faces Mott the Hoople doubleheader.
Oh, I imagine that. But yeah, it would be could be embarrassing though. If, you know, Ian Hunter comes out and sings like a birdie, and then out comes Rod and croaks like a cockerel, it could be rather embarrassing. But no, I can't badmouth Rod. He could be marvellous. I'm holding out hopes that he will be.
Yeah, he can sing, can't he? I mean, still,
he can croon.
He can croon. But can he? Do you want a crooned Paul Hall Richard? I don't know. Do you?
No, they won't do Paul Hall Richard, will they?
I hope so.
You're dreaming then.
I'm dreaming. I really am, you know. But no, there is the danger, though, that if they do what we see as the hits, the Maggie Mays and all that stuff, it's going to be a Rod Stewart gig with them in the background, which I'm sure Ronnie Wood would have a lot to say about that. They don't want to turn into a Rod Stewart gig again. So I'm sure they will. They're going to do all, you know, You Can Make Me Dance, Singing Anything, all because they haven't really got much.
That's true.
Not that much to play.
Did you see them and did you see Mott the Hoople back in the olden days?
No, I never saw the Faces. Dreamt of it, but never saw them. Well, I saw...
You are obviously too... The listeners can't see how young you are, just on the off chance.
I mean, obviously, I'm I'm kind of delicious looking, you know. I've still got it all going on, ladies. If you're out there, hello, ladies.
Perhaps you should be the bass player.
Perhaps I should. Yeah, I can plonk with a vest.
There
of
you
them.
Go.
Yeah.
There's our answer.
Absolutely, I've got my own scarf.
Indeed.
But, Mott the Hoople, did you see that?
I didn't see Mott the Hoople, no. But I did see Ian Hunter.
Have you ever been to a gig?
I know, it's terrible. 1977 I saw Mott the Hoople. Well, not Mott the Hoople, but Ian Hunter when he first did his Overnight Angels thing with, I was going to say Grey Slick. That would be good. I'd love to do that. Earl Slick. Yeah. Went to see The Jam. Cancelled the gig, so we all went to go and see Ian Hunter. And he was really good. Blew us away. Terribly excited. But yeah, that was when you kind of realised that, yeah, this is the godfather of your old punk rock with the, tunes like Violence and all that and Onaluchi Boogie. Yeah.
Brilliant. I love
it's
Onaluchi
all lovely.
Boogie. I don't like Violence, though.
Yeah. What, the actual...
Yeah, the song.
The stuff.
Oh, I don't even mean the thing.
The actual festicuffs, I'm not that keen on though I am Scottish.
Just in case you said, oh, yeah, I love Violence. And then so you go outside and there's people waiting out there with tattoos and baseball bats going, okay.
Let's have it.
Let's have some.
Shall we have some music?
Shall we?
Oh, yeah, come on.
All right, then, let's have Pride Tiger. And this is a title track, The Lucky Ones.
And me and Sean are going to trot a mean foot around the floor to this.
Don't you know that we're the lucky ones? Always laughing, always having fun. But there's one thing that I'm needing. I can't wait until the weekend. Let's make plans for later on. There's one way to get the feeling right. Spend all my money on good times tonight. So won't you put your finest clothes on? Stay and drink until it's all gone. Tie your dancing shoes up tight.
That was Pride Tiger and the Lucky Ones, and I'm not going to make any comment about Ian and myself dancing. But of course, Pride Tiger were one of the bands that played the Classic Rock sponsored Hard Rock Hell Festival back in December. And talking of festivals, the rumours are starting to come in for this year's summer summer rock fests. And I suppose the biggest ones that we need to worry about now is the download rumours. Of course, Heaven and Hell sort of outed themselves by saying we're going to be on them on the download stage by putting up tour dates on their website, which was then denied by the promoter of Download.
So what I can guess from that is that they are going to play, but the contract hasn't been signed.
Reading between the lines,
money
hasn't been agreed. I would guess because right. they put it on their tour dates page, and then the Download people said, no, they're not.
They haven't made the packed lunch just yet.
Not quite yet. So watch this space, but maybe Hard Rock Hell, Heaven and Hell will be playing at Download this year. But at least there is a Download this year, because there was rumours that, what would happen after the changes from last year and the different part of the site and what would be Download 2009.
And do we know whether the Download's back to full size this year?
I don't know.
Again.
Mm-hmm. We shall see. But the big rumours, I guess, at the moment are Faith No More, which is a rumour, if nothing else. But
an outlandish rumour, but you got to
assume. Yeah, because that's not going to happen, is it? Of all the bands that are going to reunite, I really can't see Faith No More doing it.
He's a busy boy, old Mick Patton, isn't he?
I just don't think he cares about wanting to be in Faith No More anymore.
Limp Bizkit, on the other hand.
Oh, Lord God.
Is that legit? Is that a real rumour?
Is it time for the new metal revival already? It probably is.
It must
probably
be 10 years ago. Most
people
things
are. Yeah,
well, I mean, I'm Stained and all that coming back, aren't they? So, oh, God, no.
I mean, you can talk about Limp Bizkit all you like, but I'm most excited because I can see the name Man of War on that list. And we don't see enough of Man of War in this country. They've got to be seen to be believed.
I don't want to see them.
You've got to see them. They drive on stage on Harley Davidson motorcycles. They wear
loincloths.
What's wrong with that? That's what you want. That's caricature big rock.
Aren't they? They're the ones they signed their deal in blood.
They certainly did.
Because they're that metal.
They did. But they don't come here because they think that people don't like them over here, I think. They don't get taken seriously. They think we're a little too we have too much of a sense of humour in this country.
Hang on. They come on stage wearing loincloths and we don't take them seriously. Let's ponder that for just a minute.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. What's wrong with a loincloth? People have worn worse and probably will again.
That's true. But I'd go and see them just for, the giggle.
You really should. I saw them. The time I saw them in Portugal. And I was over there covering Napalm Death. And Napalm Death were supporting, and they were in their little dressing room backstage. And suddenly the folks from Man of War's people came to us and said, can you please leave your dressing rooms for the time being and get out, basically. Because everybody had to leave the backstage area. To the band, Napalm Death, poor old Barney and myself and the band and Shane and everybody. Off we had to go and march away. Because the reason that we were given we had to leave was because they had to do their motorcycle sound check. Wow. And they had to drive through that area. And, of course, they have these Harley Davidsons, but they're mic'd up for full effect. It's not enough the roar of the engines. They have to put them through the PA. So everybody was unceremoniously dumped out of the backstage area so that they could mic up their motorcycles. So this is the kind of people you're dealing with.
Pros.
Exactly.
You don't get many of those to the pound.
Marauding around the Iberian perimeter, on these motorcycles. And we haven't had them here for years, and we should. We need to see them.
But Download or not, I hear rumours that there's going to be big Man of War action this year.
Well, they did that massive thing, didn't they, in Germany, where they played all their albums? Or they played for hours and hours.
Brilliant.
no, they did. They played, I'm sure it was them.
Was
they
it Guantanamo Bay?
That would be it, that holiday camp there. Yeah. But no, then they played all their albums sort of back to back for hours, and people lapped it up. So
they create the black wind, This is the noise that comes from their PA. They create a black wind.
Is that the Harleys? Apparently.
Yeah. Joey DeMeo plays his million beats per minute Sting of the Bumblebee bass solo. It's something to be seen. It's the fifth wonder of the fourth wonder of the world, or whatever they say.
Well, with any luck, we'll get to see it at Download this coming summer.
Well, so, can we move on from them now? Because I think I've said all I can say about them. Yeah.
So other rumours for Download are the Motley Crue.
The Def Leppards.
ZZ Toppers.
I'd go and see any of them, frankly. I'd love to see ZZ Top over here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again,
it seems
too
long.
I think, in a way, those three would make for a really nice day. Like the Friday of last year's Download, where you had that. It was real old school, wasn't it? With Priest and Motorhead and, Kiss.
Yeah.
It would make for a good sort of a good rock day without too much, you know, growling.
ZZ Top,
yeah,
on enormous,
growling, you know, is bad. Let's make that clear.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Manowar don't growl, do they?
No, not ever.
Not even
no.
New Manowar.
No.
There's no growling. They sing.
But no, ZZ Top were on incredibly good form. There's a DVD came out quite recently and they were fantastic in it, because the thing is with them, they never get any older because they had that amazing idea of being old in the first place. So they still look the same.
They did that thing as well, didn't they, fairly recently, where they did Eliminator live, sort of from start to finish. I think they did it in LA, and that was supposed to, by all accounts, supposed to be very, very good. So I think they could bring that over here. Even if they don't play Download, they should at least come over.
It's astounding to watch them, because there's only three of them, you know. They're literally only three of them, a guitar player, a bassist and a drummer, and they make an enormous noise. It's not an enormous, horrible, ridiculous, growling dogfight noise like a lot of bands make, but like a proper rock and roll, big old, you know, they make as much noise as Aerosmith make, you know. And there's only three of them. And they've got beards, apart from the one that's called Beard. There's a fact for you. I bet no one knew that out there.
Yeah.
Remember that for the quiz next week.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah.
You heard it here first.
We should have an interview, since we did some earlier.
Oh, yeah.
So here's Jeff Barton talking to the Mighty Thunder.
Okay, welcome to the Classic Rock Podcast with the guys from Thunder, Luke and Danny. How are you doing, chaps?
We're good, thanks, Jeff.
Oh, Jeff,
you?
Good. Just hold me back in sandwich, I'm happy now.
Okay, you've got a new album coming out called Bang, which is taken from the James Gang album of 1973.
Oh, you're the first person that's interviewed us that's known that. I was hoping nobody would notice, but never mind.
But pre-Tommy Bolin, so it's not really one we should... Yeah. It was Joe Walsh on that one?
It was Joe Walsh.
Yep. Okay. Anyway, we'll skirt over that issue. Mm-hmm. It was recorded in a castle, which is very old school, isn't it? I remember Purple recording in Clearwell Castle and things like that. But this one was one in Bristol, yeah?
Yeah, Clevedon in Somerset. Mm-hmm. It's called Walton Castle. It sits on top of a hill overlooking Bristol Estuary. Very nice. A friend of ours owns it, which is why we came to be there in the first place. And she's sort of an old mate of ours. And I went down there to see her and she said, oh, you know, what do you think? I said, it's great because I just had the place done up. And I said, this would make a fantastic recording studio. If you ever, you know, and she went, well, why don't you try it? So we went down and tried a little bit. That worked great. And then we thought, well, it's working so well, let's do the rest of the album there. And that was it, basically. Really simple.
Oh, great. So there was no sort of ghosts? Because I know Clearwell was reputedly full of ghosts, wasn't there? Or at least it was Blackmore playing stunts.
Well, we're not kind of... Well, myself and Mr. Beers here aren't really of the kind of... what can we say? A supernatural kind of... Our bass player... He was swearing blind that he'd heard all sorts of things going on.
Yeah, but then he believes in crop circles, alien abductions, right, yeah, the full half hour, you know. Yeah. So, you know, it was kind of given that he would do that. But, yeah, he had all changed rattling and he thought everything. I mean, Harry drove his car into a ditch accidentally in a pouring rain because it's quite a steep hill up there. And he drove his car into a ditch. So straight away, Chris is there. That's the ghost.
It's a sign.
That's the ghost. Straight away, it's a sign, you know. And we're just saying, well, you know, can you see any bright lights? Are there any aliens ahead? You know, it was just... I suppose with all these things, you can read things in if you're looking for them.
Yeah, yeah.
But we certainly weren't, being very more practical.
Yeah, and probably more drunk.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's a big contrast to the old days when record companies were throwing money at you, though, isn't it? You know, with obviously with the Terraplane days before you formed Thunder, et cetera, et cetera. And now you're very much your own kind of band, you know, doing your own thing.
Yeah.
And very much in control of your own destinies. Which do you prefer? Do you prefer Thunder as it is now or Thunder when you had this incredible amount of financial backing from record companies that were perhaps pulling the strings a little bit?
I would say it was probably more exciting then, because obviously it was all brand new.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, the whole idea of, you know, somebody phoning you up and saying, right, you're doing this, and there's a car and it's going to drive you and then there'll be someone to meet you. And it's all, you know, it's all very exciting. It's kind of what you dream of, you know, when you're sort of as a kid, you know, when you're in your bedroom practicing and hoping one day that it'll happen. But it's also very exciting now because whilst we don't have that sort of attention anymore, we're able to make a lot of things happen. And there's a lot of pleasure and a lot of excitement that you get from making things happen and turning it around and, you know, actually getting it from nothing into something that's really, really, you know, really happening. I mean, you know, the fact that we're here having a conversation with you about it means that it's still possible to do that.
That's absolutely right, yeah, yeah. And I think you've kind of used maybe something that Marillion have done as a bit of a business model for what you're doing as well, because they're very independently minded these days.
We certainly did have a good look at what they did at the beginning. When we first decided to form the label, Marillion were very much our guides, if you like. I mean, we've adopted a lot of their ideas and adapted a lot of their ideas. Not all of it, because some of the things they do, we don't think suit us. So
And don't suit our fans either. I think it's a sort of slightly different audience, I think.
Yeah.
But I think to answer your original question, I think possibly, from my point of view, I think it's great the way it is now. But it'd be nice to have the record company money we had back then.
Yeah, because if we had the money. Yeah. That they have.
We'd do a much better job, I tell you.
We could do a really good job of it now.
Right.
We really could do a good job of it now.
It's a sobering thought, isn't it? Yeah, yeah. So what about, I was reading Paul Elliott interviewed you for Classic Rock magazine, so we'll have an interview, actually, a physical interview for people to read in a couple of issues' time. But he unearthed a couple of very amusing anecdotes from you about Bon Jovi and also Axl Rose.
Did he?
At the Rainbow Bar and Grill. Uh-huh. And I was wondering if you could relate those for the listeners to this particular podcast.
Well, it'll be different this time, you know, because it's all lies.
Or falsifications. Right? Well, make it up as you go along.
Yeah, make up something different this time.
But Axl Rose, when we first signed to EMI, we were signed to Capitol in the States. And we went out there, did a couple of showcases, and the guy who ran Capitol at the time said, "I love you guys." And went into another room with their manager and said, "I can't stand this band. I don't see it. I don't see it at all." So basically, we came back to London, went to EMI and said to the guy that ran the company, "Look, you know, you've got to let us go in America, otherwise we're buried. And obviously it's very important for us, potentially." So... in between all this going on, we'd got booked to open Donington in 1990. While we were actually on playing our slot, John Colodner was on the Aerosmith tour bus driving up there.
He was the Geffen A&R man guru extraordinaire that, you know, bands like Aerosmith, Guns N' Roses, Whitesnake, I mean, all these people were all signed by him and looked after by him. Carry on, Luke.
And prior to his kind of, prior to this, Steven Tyler, David Coverdale, and Axl Rose had all mentioned us to Colodner. And this is, he heard us on the radio, literally, and said to Steven Tyler, "This band sound good, who are they?" So he said, "That's the band I've been telling you about, that's Thunder." So about 2 weeks later, we were on a plane out to LA, and the deal was done like that. It was very quick. And literally the night we got there to sort of discuss all this with Geffen, we went and had dinner at the Rainbow Bar and Grill, as you do, as I'm sure you have many a time. And we're sitting in there, and I said, "Look, there's Axl Rose at the next table." And a bit of drunken bonhomie, so I stood up and wandered over and said, "Excuse me, sir." I said, and he looked at me like he wanted to stab me, and I said, "I'm Luke from Thunder." And he went, "Oh, I love you guys." A really deep voice, isn't he?
I've never spoken to Axl, actually.
He's a very deep voice for somebody who sings so high, isn't
he?
And I said, "Well, do come and join us when you finish dinner." So he was with Erin Everly at the time, and they came and sat at our table. And it was very interesting. We just talked about English music the whole evening.
He was incredibly knowledgeable, wasn't
David
he?
Bowie, Elton John, new wave of British heavy metal. He knew everything. Yes.
Really?
He knew about Terraplane. And he didn't know quite as much as Lars Ulrich, who knew about Nothing Fancy, which really
nobody knows as much as Lars Ulrich.
No, this is true. Yeah. But he was very knowledgeable. And contrary to kind of most people's opinion of him, I found him to be very, very bright, very entertaining, very funny. Obviously, he's completely barking mad. It shows what a good judge of character I am. There you go.
So that was an experience.
Yes, it was. It was fun.
And what about Bon Jovi then at the Marquee? That sort of galvanised you, as I understand it, didn't it, seeing him there?
Yeah, that was at the end of Terraplane. I mean, and we hadn't really sort of decided what we were going to do. But seeing Lita Ford at the Marquee, he came on. John Bon Jovi came on in the encore as a special guest. And he did the thing with her, and we stood there and watching it. And we were complete. I mean, at that point, obviously, he's very, very famous. And at that point, we were just kind of blown away by the fact that he just seemed to be really ordinary, you know. But yet, you know, all the fame and all the adulation was there, and the audience went nuts. And, you know, of course, we're just coming out the arsehole end of Terraplane at this point.
Can you say arsehole?
I've said it. Well, you said it as well.
Did I?
So it's too bad now. Arsehole. Oh, see, it's gone wrong. So as a result of that encounter, you know, we went away, and it had a deep and sort of profound effect on Luke and also me. And, you know, that was it. That was the end of that band and the beginning of a new band.
So if John Bon Jovi can do it, you know, we can do it better, kind of thing.
Well, not so much like that. It was just a case of...
It was like that for me, yeah. I just thought he was very average, and all this, and there was a lot of praying. I thought Slippery and Wet was a very good album, but I'd not seen him sing live, and he came out and was, "Oh, really? Is that it?" wanker. You know, right, we do better. So it was kind of, it did, it galvanised the whole thing. It was like, right, okay, we're going to, this is what we've got to do. And we literally went and had a meeting after that in the St Moritz Club and said, right, okay, this, you know, this is what I think we should do. And that was it. And that was the beginning of Thunder, literally.
Yeah, we literally just started all over again.
Interesting, yeah. Going back to the present day very quickly then, as I say, new album's called Bang. You've also got the EP out, The Joy of Six, which is the third in a series of three.
Correct.
Is that the third and final one?
Yeah.
And what's
yeah.
what's the thinking behind that? Why do an EP as well as the album?
Well, we had sort of, it was, we realised it was going to be a gap between the last album and this one. So we figured it might be quite an interesting thing to do, to have a sort of drip feed of new material in between. And we had lots of sort of live recordings and bits and pieces. And I was obviously writing new material. And also with the fact that obviously now we are, in effect, the record company, we can do what we like, when we like. And we thought it might be interesting just to kind of, as I said, drip feed the material in between.
And our fans were asking for it as well. I mean, literally within about 8-9 months of Robert Johnson's Tombstone being released at the end of 2006, they were all saying, so when are we going to get a new album? We were saying, give us a chance. We haven't even finished this one. You know, we're still touring on it, you know. But, the, you know, the requests kept coming in, kept coming in, kept coming in. So, you know, it got to the point where we thought, well, you know, if we have got some material and we have got the ability to put it out, why don't we do just sort of some little tiny bite-sized chunks? And with the live material and the new songs, it just made sense to do that. So we did one, and that became two. And in the end, we thought, well, why don't we do a third one, put it in a box, so the other two will fit in it, you know? And it's kind of developed, really. It was, you know, it wasn't a grand plan. It just kind of developed as it went along.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, Luke and Danny from Thunder, thank you. And that's the Classic Rock Pop Podcast.
Thank you, Jeff.
Pop Podcast.
Cut.
How we're going to pad this after this bit to the end, I've no
idea.
This
is good. Here we go. Free form.
Free what form were we talking about earlier that was quite good? You had loads to say about it.
Something about...
Zappa. We were having a Zappa conversation.
Pop groups, pop groups in the rock world. We were desperately after anything to drown out Zappa. That was like, say anything. That was,
you can't talk over Zappa, though, it turns out.
No.
I couldn't even think straight when it was on.
No.
I'm sorry, it was horrible. No.
See, there's a thing. You have to be there when these things are kind of happening and recorded
frankly,
to truly understand it.
But having heard that this morning, I'm glad I wasn't, because I always sort of thought, oh, you know, I should give him a go one day. Oh, but really?
Yeah.
A bit much.
But it comes from a different
jazz.
World.
It was jazz.
Yeah, well, I suppose so. But, you know, thinking about it, it was even more classical than jazz. You know, it starts out with a written theme and then it goes off into
It starts off sounding like your Bon Tempi organ preset.
Oh,
of bossa nova or something.
I can hear the bubbling of Paul Henderson's blood boiling, who is the office Zappophile.
Dr. Jazz, you mean?
Yeah, absolutely. He put it on today and all kind of, he thought that we were all just going
to
go, ha-ha, hats are going to go into the air. And I, because I'm a bit of a Zappa fan as well, I quite like the song in question, Peaches and Regalia from Hot Rats. And I was thinking, yeah, of course, this is going to show those young'uns how we used to rock it down in the olden days before, you know, people had their hair cut off. And, like, as immediately it was said, you know, because we played the Bonzo Dog Doodle Band in the office in a similar style, and everybody who hadn't been old enough to remember it first time round just looked at us as though we were imbeciles and fools. And we kind of...
I think Jeff Barton looked like that as well.
Yeah. Everybody, totally askance. But, yeah, it was... But there is this feeling that if you weren't there and you didn't suffer it at the time, you...
See, you suffer
don't
it
really
at the time.
It.
Even your terminology, of speaking as someone who likes it, is still... Is not the most positive.
Well, this is
word
the problem because the world's changed.
It.
The world has really changed, and although there were certain tunes like that Bonzo Dog Band, supposedly funny tune, can't remember which
so
one
not
it was,
funny.
And the Frank Zappa one, is that you listen to it in a completely different world. And
what Stones even?
Well, no, but there was no. But we were told, this is another thing, you were told by the media how fantastic it was. And, you know, you're only 12 and you thought, well, these our elders are telling us that we should be listening to this. So you listen to it with an open mind. You've invested probably 3 weeks pocket money in it, so you're not going to dislike it. You listen to every single note of it. You read the back cover right down to who printed it, normally Garrard and Lofthouse. And you kind of think, well, yeah, this is great. And that becomes part of your makeup. But then when you play it to people 30 years later, and for the first time, and you suddenly think, as you're about to put it on, they're not going to get this, because you realise that. I realise that now, if I heard any of that for the first time now, I'd be in exactly the same place as you, because it doesn't work now in that context.
Playing stuff out loud, though, is funny like that. Even though we were talking the other day about the Skids well, final album as such, The Absolute Game, and I was saying how much I loved it because, you know, I was just the right age to get it when it came out. If I played that in the office, though, I guess I'd feel a little bit exposed, having said how brilliant it is.
Yeah, you really do put yourself out there. Yeah, you've really tied yourself to the mast of the Skids.
But it is so much of when you first hear an album. Like you say, it's all, you used to invest so much more in a record because, like you say, it was your pocket money and you had one album. It wasn't, you didn't have so many to pick from. That was the one that you'd chosen to buy that month or whatever. And you, even if in the cold light of day you put it on and you thought, not quite convinced, you forced yourself to like it because that was the album that you had that was new. And you made yourself listen.
Can you think of an example
of
an album like that, Sharma? You did that, you forced yourself to, you kind of thought, oh God, this is a bit much. But after repeated listenings, grew to love.
I was a bit, you won't like this. I was a bit like that with Neil. When I first heard Neil Young's Harvest,
Diamond then.
No. But Neil Young's Harvest was a bit like that because I'd heard it, again, it was from reading the rock press and this is genius, this is, and I didn't really know Neil Young at all. So I went to the local record shop and that was the one they had. So I bought it. I didn't like his voice, and it all got a bit bonkers towards the end. And I was like, oh, really? But that was the record that I'd bought that fortnight or that month or whatever. So I played it over and over and over again. And I really like Neil Young now, and I like his voice. But again, I think if you brought that to someone and said, oh, this is great, you wouldn't necessarily, on first listen, you might think, oh, God, you know, what's that bloke's voice like? Sounds like a girl, or he's just whining, or what a racket. And that's one I sort of... I love it now, but I forced myself as a 14, 15-year-old to like that.
I forced myself and convinced myself, even though now I'm kind of seen as the anti-prog, to like certain areas of prog in about 73 and 74, when I'd reached sort of 13, 14, and I'm thinking, I'm too old now. I've got to set aside childish things like T-Rex and The Sweet and Slade.
Songs, you mean?
And, you know, exactly, like the bands that I now have gone back to and realised that they are the Dead Sea Scrolls of rock and, you know, like The Faces and all this. And thought, I've got to get into something a bit more adult. And so on the cover of the NME and Melody Maker at the time, you had Emerson, Lake & Palmer. Well, absolutely massive. And I saved up my pocket money and I went out on the day it came out and bought the triple Welcome Back, My Friends, The Show That Never Ends live album. And I sat there as a 14-year-old and listened to an entire side of piano improvisations and all this kind of stuff. And I convinced myself that this was what you do when you reach 14. You stop listening to sirens on Blockbuster and you start listening to people chasing a Moog synthesizer around an ice rink. Like Rick Wakeman was the other one. I bought The Journey to the Center of the Earth by Rick Wakeman. And I remember taking it into school, as you did in those days, under your arm, like a badge of honour, not in a bag, so people would see what you had, and going into the cloakroom. And one of the older boys came up to me, who didn't normally speak to me with my kind of, you know, Alice Cooper badges on. And he looked at the Rick Wakeman album, which had just come out, and he said to me, oh, the new Wakeman, is it marvellous? And I was like, my God, they even use this terminology, which isn't like, is it good? Is it great? It's marvellous, you know.
And good and great are two shorter words. It's like the recognition of the songs. You say they need a long word.
Yeah, they need a word with a cape on.
Yeah,
a becaped word. Yeah, you know, one syllable's not enough for prog, and never has been, never will be. But then I kind of, you know, punk rock came along and saved me from walking through the valley of the shadow of prog, and I've been fine since. But no, I still do have a certain fondness for certain, you know, bits of Emerson, Lake and Palmer. You know, like the kind of Greg Lake bits where things don't get too out of hand, like Lucky Man. And I still hold a great fondness for them. And I know an enormous amount about them because I've forced myself to. But did I ever really like them? Nah. I was just trying to be a grown-up. There you go.
So do you think kids have lost that these days, you know, that they don't try hard enough? They don't, you know, buy all that old tosh and...
I don't think they have to.
Try and learn it.
That's the thing, because when you kind of became aware of your own being and you wanted to escape your mum's apron strings, you would fly into the arms of the music press. And the music press would tell you there are certain types of music, i.e. pop music, which is evil. And there's other types of music, which is our kind of music, and it's what you should be into. It's got
and you will
what
be
we
cool
call
and-
street credibility. And it's got cred, and you should do this, and you should wear this, and you should do that. And you kind of just fell in line. You snapped in line. You picked it off, you know, this kind of individuality thing. Whichever tribe you joined, you took it off the peg, like people now take the kind of whole emo look off the peg. And that was it. You know, you kind of really bought into what you were told to listen to. And yeah, but there was that, the whole feeling of cred and non-cred. Whereas now you look at the Weekly Music Press and it's all the same thing. You've got Girls Aloud as the lead album review in a magazine which elsewhere is talking about, you know, bands like even Zeppelin, you know. And it's like, well, we're, and kids that are coming to the music press for the first time, I mean, I certainly, I don't know when you came to it, but I was about 12, 11 or 12 when I first started buying them. And you are going to be influenced by this kind of thing. And as there is now not that big divide between what is credible and what's not, it's just all pop music, then it's all become a bit blurred. And while we've grown up it, from our generations to believe it's you know, there's the man's music and there's the kid's music, you know, it's now all one thing, and I don't think it's so important. It's, and that's why you can have Glastonbury festivals and
I wonder, and also like on. Festivals and things like that. It now it is that, you know, you see teenage kids going with their mums and dads to a festival because there is they grew up having listened to the same music that the kids do. Whereas I suppose generations before, rock music was a real it was a real culture shock, you know. Yeah, the parents might listen to, I don't know, Sinatra and the Rat Pack and all of that. Then all of a sudden you've got the Beatles and the Stones and then, you know, latterly your Purples and Zeppelins. You wouldn't, you know, get your dad to tag along to a Led Zeppelin gig, I'm sure, in 1972 or whatever, you know. Yeah. And yet now you've still got these, the bands have proved they've got longevity and you've got Rolling Stones playing now. And yet you can have, you know, you could have, you could have a three generations. You could have a granddad, you know, a son or daughter and a you know, a mom in the middle, and who have got sort of
and
a connection
dressed,
to the Rolling
all
Stones.
And they dressed to look like that band, you know. Yeah. It's like it's all about becoming a bit ironic and fancy dress, isn't it? You know, they go to a metal gig and put the metal T-shirt on and then the next week go to, you know, see some pop band and look and like...
Yeah, put a football shirt on or something.
Miss but Penny. As it used to be when we were kids, you know, like we were talking the other day, I always wanted a mod parka when I was younger, but I was never a mod, so I just thought it looked cool. And to buy, I would never have bought one in a million years because the responsibility of walking around, mods would look at you wondering if you're mod enough.
Yeah.
Mm. And everyone else would look at you thinking you were a mod. So, you know, it's no win. Yeah. These days, it just people chuck on a Dio shirt or a Motorhead t-shirt or a Ramones t-shirt.
Blame Topshop.
Just because it's cool.
That's right, yeah, it's just fleeting fashion. It doesn't really mean anything.
You so know, you can be a punk one week and a heavy metal, I mean, metalhead the next week. And...
But then you've got that weird dichotomy, whereas you do have whole families of punks now where, you know, they've grown up with listening to that music and they're listening to the same music as their parents did and they're all, the whole family going to the same gig. But when you look at it, it's, in our parlance, we look at it as that's a great thing because they're part of our kind of tribe. But if you look back on it, it would be like in the 60s if, instead of getting into the Rolling Stones and the Beatles and, you know, latterly getting into rock, you were listening to your parents' Perry Como records and Frank Sinatra. And now if you look at kids that are going to see pop bands, they're the people who are probably rebelling against their parents. You know, that's a form of rebellion. People listening to Girls Aloud, probably there's a great deal of people listening to Girls Aloud are only doing it to really annoy their father who's upstairs listening to Saxon.
That probably
is the true rebellion of it. You know, that's,
the Girls Aloud is the new rock and roll. Is that what you're
irony.
Saying?
Well, that's probably. I reckon there are a few people who are doing it as a protest vote, just to annoy the mum and dad. You know, if you've invested your entire life into heavy metal, and suddenly you see your offspring saying, "No, Dad, I don't want to go and see Manowar when they play at this year's Download Festival. I'm going to see Jay-Z supporting Coldplay." That's rebellion. Yes. That's where people bite the stem of their pipe in half and go mental. Kick the set in, you know. There's your kick the set in moment. It's all gone wrong, kids.
Oh, hasn't it just?
There are some great new bands, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, should we listen
to
one?
Go on, then.
how many songs have we listened to this month?
One.
Let's listen to
another Powerage band, End Ever After.
All the way you
Okay, so that was End of After and Baby, 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 or whatever it's called. And next up, we've got Jeff Barton talking to the fantastic Phil Collin of Def Leppard, but and promoting Man Rays, I should say.
Yeah.
Phil's become a bit infamous in our office, hasn't he?
He has, yeah.
For with his manly physique.
He likes to show off his pecs.
He's waxed.
Yeah.
Very much.
Oh, I mean, shaved. I don't know how you do it.
I don't know.
Waxed. I think waxed.
He's got a... an upstairs front Brazilian, we like to call them in my house. He's no Gary Glitter. Oh, now that takes us into a completely different area.
Yeah, let's not follow that.
No, I was just talking about his hairy chest. Let's ditch that and say he's no Freddie Mercury. No, then again, no, that's even worse. No, not even worse. Dead with it? No, I don't know.
He's not David Hasselhoff.
Exactly. Well, who is? David Hasselhoff.
There's a funny thing.
He's bald. He's shaved. Shaven.
We've gone into such a dangerous area.
Women like the shaven chest. I think that's the new look of the modern male. Charm, yeah. Is
it? Oh, it might be, but it's a bit. That's a bit icky.
A bit creepy.
Yeah.
Does it rock?
I don't think so. You want your man to have a bit of chest hair. I'm sorry, but you do.
Yeah.
Because it's just. Oh, no, it's like even Phil, who is, he looks good. Fair
he looks
play.
Very good. He's very
he looks
trim,
very
isn't
good.
He?
Looks very trim. But really, mate, put your shirt back on, okay?
Yeah. Maybe chest hair is about 70s to reveal. If you're going to take your top off and you're a bit hairy, you're going to look
a bit. There's a bit hairy and then there's a bit hairy, isn't there?
I think
there's degrees of hairiness.
The thing is with Man Rays, I think really Phil Collin is dragging poor old Paul Cook with him into...
Yeah, because you're not going to see him with his shirt off, are you?
Well, yes, thing, you are. Yeah. The next edition of Classic Rock, all three of them are their
yeah,
tops
Yeah, they've
off.
All got their tops off because, you see, Phil Collin's got his shirt off and then there's the pressure upon Paul Cook to get his off. And while Phil Collin has got his shirt off because he knows
he's can
been
look good
to the gym.
He can do it,
He's been to the gym. Paul Cook hasn't. Paul Cook has been having chips with everything. And suddenly you see Paul Cook's face in this photograph and as you can see that there's a little look of horror as he's sucking it in.
Wait, why didn't he just leave his shirt on? You know, I do not understand.
To be fair to Paul, he's quite trim as well. So they're obviously thinking, guys of certain age, they've been tarred with a certain brush.
Well,
but Phil is like, he's one of those super fit guys, isn't he? You know, he's a total gym rat. Mm. He is ripped.
Yeah, ripped.
or whatever the parlance is.
You know fine what the parlance is.
Fair play.
That's fine and fair play, but not at every conceivable opportunity. I wouldn't be surprised if he had his shirt off when he was doing the podcast with Jeff.
Possibly. You never know.
Take our shirts off.
go on then, boys.
Right.
In a few months' time.
I like I love the way you take this the whole spotlight off the fact that we're not wearing anything by saying, shall we take our shirts off? We've been sitting here completely naked throughout this podcast and completely waxed. And now Scott's trying to sort of throw you off the scent by all this nonsense about shirts. But no, let's hear the shirt meister then,
shall we?
Let's
hear the all-naked interview with Jeff Barton.
Hi there and welcome to the Classic Rock podcast. And I'm here with Phil Collin of Def Leppard fame. But we're not really here to talk about Def Leppard, are we, Phil?
Absolutely not. How are you doing?
Fine, thanks. We're here to talk about Man Rays, which is your, your side project, really. So... explain to people about Man Rays for the people that may not necessarily know too much about it.
Man Rays is a three-piece. It's me doing vocals and guitar, Paul Cook, who plays with the Sex Pistols on drums, and Simon Laffey on bass, who used to play in Girl, a band from like a long time ago. And it's great. You know, we got together about 4 years ago. It's more alternative. You know, it goes dub reggae. It's a bit got a punky kind of vibe to it, and people have just on what they describe us, it's been anything from like the Clash, the Police, the Foo Fighters, and you can hear slight bits of Def Leppard, and that's just because of the voice, I guess, and the guitar bits here and there, and but it's more of a kind of an alternative kind of thing, really.
Yeah, we first wrote about you in Classic Rock, I think, about 3 years ago, towards the end of 2005. So the project's been on the boil for a long time.
Yeah.
But the new album's just come out, hasn't it?
Right.
Surreal, I think it's called, yeah? Why has that taken so long to reach fruition?
I think I'm actually glad it did, really, because I think if we'd have done the stuff when we'd just done our first little gig and rushed it out, they wouldn't have had the same depth that the song's got. We went back and rehearsed. Not like a Def Leppard thing, because it wasn't kind of just done over a block of time. It was actually, we'd come back, we'd go on tour, you'd change the songs, and then by the time we actually went to record it, it took 2 weeks. We'd done it at Joe's house. We're in Dublin, Joe Elliott from Leppard, who we've done like the last 4 or 5 Def Leppard records. Same room and everything, same guitar equipment. It sounds completely different. And I think it's just because of the way we approached it. But it was a bit like, you know, the old approach, you get the songs right first and then you record them. Whereas with Def Leppard, you know, we get into a studio and we go, okay, it's a blank canvas. And it has a totally different feel about it. This is a lot more kind of immediate when you do it that way, I think.
Has it been a bit frustrating for you to do it like sort of piecemeal, fitting it in between your Leppard commitments?
It has, but having said that, I'm really pleased how it's turned out. So I'm kind of happy in that respect. And it's just got... We was rehearsing yesterday and it was the best it ever sounded. And it's I'm just thrilled, really. It's got just an excitement to it, such a buzz to it.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of three-piece bands because I think it's almost like the limitations of that format kind of work in their favour in a strange way. Would you agree with that?
I totally agree. I actually didn't realise that until we started playing as Man Ray's, the freedom. You know, I guess like the classic, the Hendrix stuff, the Police, Nirvana. You can go off on complete tangents and not get caught up in, you know, the song or the arrangement. It's a lot more liberating. There's a lot more freedom, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned, obviously, Hendrix and Nirvana, et cetera, et cetera. And, I mean, obviously, Rush as well, another great three-piece band who sound like, you know, 84-piece
absolutely.
Band, don't they?
Yeah.
And Budgie as well, always a big favourite of mine. So there's, I think you're right, Phil, you know, there's definite plus points to that. But also, I mean, coming up of, you know... Leppard are, you know, a big sounding band, always been very well produced, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a big departure, isn't it? In that
it's
respect.
Huge. I mean, the big thing is that, you know, with Def Leppard, you know, I can like back off and you know, Viv's playing as well. We've got all these backing vocals going off all the time. So it's almost, that's like another instrument right there. And with Man Ray's, we try to not do the backing vocal thing. And you end up filling space, not gratuitously, but because you go, oh, it'd be interesting if I did this. Whereas in Def Leppard or most bands, you know, where there's a lot of instruments going on, that you tend to not do that. You know, you just accept it for what it is. And this is a totally different kind of set of rules. It's great.
Yeah, it's a good challenge.
It really is.
Yeah. I remember we reviewed you, may possibly be in your debut show at a London club called The Spits.
Absolutely,
a few years back. And I remember our reviewer was very positive about your performance, but he said, oh, it would have been really nice to have had a girl number in there or a Leppard number or a Pistols number. Is that something you consider for the future?
Not right now, I think, because we've just been rehearsing some stuff and it'd probably be a bit naff depending on how you've done it. It could, you know, we're trying to not do that. So it's, maybe later on, actually. Yeah, maybe we'll do that, like in the new year. I think we're thinking about trying to do some American stuff in the... next year, so and maybe come back here as well. That'd be great. Okay.
And is that difficult to get your head around from playing the Enormo domes to the smaller clubs? Is that a weird mindset you find yourself in?
It is different. I mean, you can be more confident, I think, if you're playing some massive place, because everyone's kind of you can see people's faces, but it's like just this blur, and you can I think you can actually be more confident. And you know, a lot of people, a lot of artists and performers and that are painfully shy, and they're okay when they get on stage. When they get off, they're like, oh, I'm usually okay because I'm not painfully shy. So it's kind of, that works in my favor. So I think, you know, I generally enjoy some of the club stuff as well. But I mean, I prefer playing on a bigger stage because you have more room and that. But again, with Man Ray's, I'm tied to the mic a lot of the time. Yeah. So it depends on, you know, where we're going to be running around and stuff.
Yeah. I said we wouldn't talk too much about Leppard, but seeing as you're here, I think it'd just be interesting to touch on that for a little while. I mean, Songs from the Sparkle Lounge seems to be really well received.
Yeah.
Some people are saying it's your best album since Hysteria.
Right.
So that's all good. But then the downside, I guess, possibly, is it's your last one with Mercury.
Yeah.
So you're kind of out on your own now in the future. So how's that all working out for Leppard now?
That's great, because we wanted to do that for years, because as you know, with labels, it's very hard to get a full commitment out of them. Back in the 80s, it was, or the 70s, it was completely different, even part of the 90s. But everyone started running out of money. The whole format changed. The recording industry, you know, kind of went in the toilet. So you're not really getting what you're putting into it. You know, the band, we were recording these records, we're going on tour, we're working our asses off, and a label's not really coming. Actually, having said that, they worked great on the Spark Lounge in England. They'd done some amazing stuff, and we had a few people here and there in the States working. So, but generally, it was hard work, and I think we could do better on our own, to be quite honest.
Girl kind of came to prominence during the new wave of British heavy metal, and we always have a bit of a giggle when Joe Elliott, Leopard singer, gets on his high horse about the Nwobum, as we call it. Now Joe's very insistent that Leopard were never part of the new wave of British heavy metal, and I know you weren't a member of the band then, but you were in Girl, who were around about that same time. So what's your whole view on that?
I think, you know, it's a time period. You know, you just get lumped in with that. So regardless, we're all rock bands. So you know, if you were Maiden or Saxon or Leopard or Girl or kind of Vardis or whatever, it was all lumped in. It was all the same time period, literally like a year, I think, or maybe a little longer. So you're going to get that, even though I think Leopard were way different to say Maiden and Saxon. Even their first record was completely different to that. And it was more... it wasn't in the style of some of those other bands. It was a bit of a departure, as was Girl, obviously, because we used to get gobbed at and stuff like that at some of the stuff, because we were pretty and stuff. And, you know, a lot of guys affected their manhood or lack of, so they'd spit at us and stuff like that. So it was kind of funny. You know, they really wanted to kiss us, but they thought, oh, we better kick them instead, so... There you go. But so it was actually quite a bit different, I think. So I'd agree with Joe, and also the metal tag. I think, you know, Leopard's a rock band, you know, Maiden, metal, Metallica are a metal band, but yes. You know.
And of course you've got Vivian Campbell in Leopard, of course, who was in Sweet Savage right about that time. So Leopard have got that immense lineage, really, you know, going back to the you know, late 70s, turn of the 80s.
Absolutely.
So you know, can't be denied, really. But we do often have a good old chuckle when Joe starts ranting.
Absolutely. He does. It doesn't take a lot. He'll defend it. It's like, we're not that. No.
Yeah. Anyway, I think we'll wind it up now, Phil. So thanks for coming in. Good luck with Man Raised.
Cheers, thank you.
Good luck with Leopard, and that's the Classic Rock Podcast.
All right, so that was Jeff Barton talking to Phil Collin there. And we're just about done, I think. New issue of Classic Rock's out on February the 4th with Guns and fucking Roses on the cover. exclusive interview, it's all very good.
It's our annual Lost issue.
Annual Lost issue, yes. Who else is in it?
Def Leppard.
Def Leppard, great Def Leppard story. There's loads of good stuff in there. Yeah. And there's loads of albums reviewed, Ian, and loads coming up in the next month or so.
Indeed, yeah, we've got a lot of new stuff coming up. It's quite
some big
exciting
ones as well, isn't it?
Yeah, they've all kind of appeared at once at what's normally a really fallow time of year. Got, like, you know, Bruce Springsteen and U2, big old names, but also you've got the return of Justin Hawkins with his new hot leg chaps.
Which seems to be gone down surprisingly well.
Well, yeah, it's still very Marmite, you know, it's still very much, he hasn't toned down his act at all. Everything's still loads and loads.
Ramped it up, if anything, hasn't he?
Yeah, he really has. He's cranked it up. He's this absolutely unapologetic, loads and loads of intricate vocal harmonies, lots of high-pitched stuff, lots of saucy seaside humour.
Lots of hooks.
Yeah, enormous. See, that's what carries it. I mean, whatever you say about these modus operandi, you know, at the back of it, you've got these amazing strong pop hooks. And yeah, it's gonna do well, I'm sure.
So we'll be singing that in the summer then?
Absolutely. And then 2 weeks later, we'll all be hating it. Yeah, exactly. We'll be all in denial. Hot leg. Yeah.
Who else has got albums coming up?
Oh, God, we've got an interesting 40th anniversary version of The Who's Sellout, which is going to be a real big one in reissues.
Joe Bonamassa's got a new album.
Chris Cornell's got a new album.
You name it, they're all out there. Stephen Wilson from Porcupine Tree's got a solo album, which is also incredibly well reviewed. You can tell how well things are going, because whereas everything used to be 7 out of 10 back in the day, it's all been ramped up to 8. So if it gets any more enthusiastic from our pool of writers, we're going to have to start marking out of 11 just so we've got somewhere
to go.
Be
one louder.
Exactly. Yeah. Imagine that. That's an idea for a film in there, you know.
There you go.
Maybe so.
Thank you very much, Ian Fortnum and Charlie Llewellyn and me, Scott Rowley. And this is the Hell City Glamours, who are not signed to Power Age for once. And the song is One Night Only.
I'm on the road. Time gets away, cause I just don't wanna know. Try to slow down, but the means to end. Another pretty town, and I'm missing you, my friend. Cause I need to score. Well, I'm sorry, baby, but I've never been there before. There's a beer, but a bruise, I'm a busted head. Last night I dreamt the dream of a night.